everyone, and welcome to the Canadian PodCow. I'm Sarah Sash, a dairy farmer in beautiful British Columbia.
And I'm Andrew Campbell, a dairy farmer in southwestern Ontario, which, you say beautiful British Columbia, I can't even remember. Oh, Ontario, yours to discover. That's what it is. Let me start that again, Sarah. I am a dairy farmer from Ontario, yours to discover.
That sounds a little bit sketchy.
I don't know. They have not invited me to speak on behalf of Ontario Tourism. How's everything in British, beautiful British Columbia? First cut done. You got your feet up. Everything's just like rocking.
Chugging along. We got, I don't know, 9 more days until there's peace in our home, but that's okay.
9 more days until there's peace in your home.
We got to work up all that corn ground and do the things, but I'm sure it's the same for you out there in Ontario.
Well, it is. I was wondering when you said that, like, is Gene leaving? Like, what's happening?
No,
he's coming back after that. Yes, for us, we also have a lot of corn ground to work, but it is very damp. We are kind of in the opposite situation you guys are. And it's not like it's overly wet, but we just can't do anything in our area. It's just, pieces across the province, just kind of, you get a day or two here and then you're kind of out for a day or two. It seems to be the way it goes.
Was it too crummy out for you to see the solar storm?
It was. You know what? I feel awful because, you know what? I got all these texts in the morning when I woke up about how great it is outside. And I thought none of you could have called me. Not one of you could have. Like, I don't answer texts at 11:30 at night. I'm fast asleep. Did you get to see it?
Well, I got a brand new rake, which I was super, well, brand new to me, not brand new, but I was super excited to use my rake. I have a little GPS system in my tractor, and I struggled the whole day with my GPS. Problems, problems, problems. I had no idea. And then the next day I got up and was like, Gene, it says that the solar storm was affecting the GPS, because all day I would call him and be like, I turn it on. It's like 3 feet off the line. It's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. I don't understand. And he was like, Sarah, sort yourself out. No big deal. And everything, it sounded like it was fake what I was telling him. So I was very validated.
And he was in that situation of just figure it out yourself. It's not that hard. It's never done this before.
You're like, Gene, I do not control the universe.
Oh, goodness. Well, I do wish I had seen it, but I did not. But it did look great. So,
yes, everyone else covered that for you, so don't worry.
They did. But today, in terms of actually covering things for us, we've got a great episode that looks at how the industry is kind of, aligning itself to figure out this avian influenza that seems to be impacting.
Yeah, we're not going to just chat the whole time about whatever. This episode is about the avian flu, H5N1, which has been circulating for a while in North America. Experts are closely monitoring the evolution of the strain, which infects numerous mammals, including cows.
So the question really is, like, should we as dairy producers be worried about it? We'll try to answer that question and many others in this episode. Thanks for tuning to the Canadian PodCow.
So today we're going to talk about the highly pathogenic avian influenza A, H5N1, also known as HPAI. The first cases in cows were detected in Texas in early February 2024. I'm sure you all have lots of questions. I know I certainly do. And to answer them, we're lucky to have an excellent veterinarian with us today.
That's right, Sarah. Dr. Robert Tremblay spent 40 years in his professional life working in large animal veterinary medicine. For most of that time, his primary interest was in food animal medicine. He is Doctor of Veterinary Medicine and a Doctor of Veterinary Science from the Ontario Veterinary College, and is diplomat from the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine in Large Animal Internal Medicine. Dr. Tremblay, welcome to the Canadian PodCow. It's great to have you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So our first question for you, this isn't the first avian flu epidemic, but you think it's the first time in cows, or I think it's the first time in cows. Is that correct? Can you tell us a bit about when this originated in cows?
Yes. So this is the first time that an influenza A virus has been identified in cows, and H5N1 is an influenza A virus. There are other influenza viruses in cows, but this is an influenza A virus. It was first detected in March, or the announcement was made in the U.S. in March, but the clinical signs that are consistent with this disease were present for several months previously. And then subsequent to the original discovery they've been able to analyze this particular virus and have estimated that the original infection in cows probably occurred sometime in late 2023.
So then can you give me an idea? You mentioned, you know, there's certainly some of these influenza viruses in cows, but what are the symptoms of this one, specifically of these HPAI in dairy cows?
Yeah. And these ones are, the symptoms are relatively unique. And when it was first identified as a clinical problem in cows in herds in the United States, there was quite a bit of discussion about what might be causing the infection. And it is most severe in cows that are in advanced lactation, so second or greater lactation, and usually at their highest production level, so mid-lactation. Those cows, they would show a variety of signs or symptoms. They would most often go off feed and have a sharp reduction in milk production. And very uniquely, the characteristic of their milk would change from what milk normally looks like more to a consistency of what we recognize as the consistency of colostrum. So there was quite a substantial change. When the veterinarians that were involved tested to see if that was an indication of mastitis using the California mastitis test, the California mastitis test was actually negative, and so it wasn't a mastitis in this sort of situation that we would normally expect. The cow showed other signs too. They would be have a decreased feed intake. They might have had gastrointestinal signs as well. So some would be constipated, some would have diarrhea, some would have fevers, and others would not have fevers. And when it came into the herds, it spread relatively rapidly, in that the peak of the number of cows that were sick was generally within only a few days. And then the outbreak lasted for a couple of weeks. So it was a very unique clinical situation.
So we know from experience with other viruses that sometimes you can just be a carrier and sometimes you also get sick. When it comes to HPAI, do all the infected cows get sick in this case, or do we know that yet?
No, I don't think we know that yet. We know that from clinical disease that older cows in mid-lactation are more likely to show the signs or symptoms that I described. We know from a limited amount of testing that cows that look normal often are not actually shedding the virus. But it may be other circumstances where they are sick, they don't show signs, or they get infected, they don't show signs, called subclinical infection, but they could be shedding a small amount of the virus. What we do know that kind of makes this unique is that the virus is present in milk of infected cows, and the belief is that it's exposure to infected milk that likely leads to infection of other cows.
So then it's not a case of, like the influenza, I would think most would be respiratory in terms of spreading. We don't think that's the case in this situation then? It is milk, or it's still too early to know?
Well, the cows get sick. So the milk is the obvious symptom that the virus is reproducing in the cows. Some cows will show respiratory disease, so what we think of in flu in people, but they don't seem to shed a lot of virus with the signs of respiratory disease. Cows that are infected and show virus in their milk, they may not show virus in their nasal secretions, for example. And so it is a little bit different from flu in people in that respect.
Then in terms of symptoms, like you've walked through some of the big ones, obviously the big one being just that decrease in production, that colostrum-like look to the milk, probably going off feed, things like that. Are those the most obvious symptoms, or are there other things that we should be watching for at kind of a herd level, just to be aware of?
as nearly as we can tell in talking with veterinarians in the United States, that those are the major symptoms that they see. Now, this is all our knowledge is based on a relatively few herds, and it may be that some herds are infected but don't show very severe signs of infection. We're still a little early in the outbreak and to make categoric statements, but the initial herds and the herds that are being reported now, they show this characteristic of having cows in second or more lactation, mid lactation, showing decreased sharply reduced milk production and a change often in the characteristic of the milk that they do produce.
So then, because it is so early too, do we know of any treatments that are really effective for these herds that have been impacted? Is it a wait and see approach? Like what, you know, for those herds that have had it, where's the success been in trying to get through it?
So if there is a good news for this, the cows that get disease recover, although they recover slowly, and the very few of them die as a consequence of experiencing this disease. And so most of them recover given sufficient time, and their milk production recovers slowly, but they do recover milk production. It's always sort of a question whether they go back to the level of milk production that you would expect based on their stage of lactation, but they do recover. This is a virus disease, and so in cattle, we don't have any specific treatments for virus diseases. But anytime there's a virus disease, then you could be vulnerable to other types of disease. So there are treatments that might be related to that. And there are treatments that can help make cows feel better. And there are treatments to, if they become dehydrated, just supportive care.
So in terms of the testing procedure, if I think that maybe I have an animal who might have this on the farm, what's the procedure to have the cow tested if she's showing some clinical signs?
So in Canada, the veterinarians can collect samples and submit samples to the lab at no cost. And so the samples in a cow that's showing clinical signs are milk, so about 10 mils of milk with some milk from each quarter. And then it's possible also to submit nasal swabs. But those samples have to come from a veterinarian. In Canada, this disease in cows is what's called a reportable disease as well. So if you suspect that the cows have HPAI, then you're required to contact a veterinarian who will then report it to the government. And in certain provinces, it needs to be reported to the provincial government as well, not just to the federal government. And then samples are collected and sent to the lab. While they're waiting for the lab result, it's just considered a suspect case. And then should the lab result come back positive, then it would be a confirmed case. And how those herds are handled will be different based on the lab result.
So now this is kind of got a couple of parts to it. First of all, you know, Rob, in terms of we have not seen cases of this in Canada to date, correct?
Right. That is correct.
So then in terms of that, I mean, you know, what does, you know, government's role then in doing that? You talk about it being a reportable disease, and it's one of those things that we've worked hard as an industry for a long time to be ready for disease outbreaks, and how do we manage that? You know, what kind of is government doing here to ready in case all of a sudden we do start to see, you know, one or more of these cases?
So that's a multifaceted question, and maybe I'll deal with that on several. So the situation now is if there's a suspected herd, then the government is facilitating sampling. And so the farmer's not charged for collecting samples or for testing of the samples. They will have to pay, as nearly as I can tell right now, for the veterinarian to come and look at the herd and confirm that, yeah, this is a suspect, and collect the samples and send it off. So that's one thing. The government also, which is a good thing, is that they are offering that test to someone who has healthy cows. Say you're buying some cows and you want to maybe have those cows tested if they're lactating cows, the government will facilitate that. So they won't charge for that test, and that's kind of a good thing. And the government's interest is to prevent the spread. And so if there's a positive test, then they will implement controls on movement, et cetera, essentially to protect the industry as from potential spread of this particular virus. The government also, because you can imagine if virus is present in milk, then there's immediate question asked, is milk then safe for consumers? And the pasteurization process is lethal to this influenza virus. So milk that goes through pasteurization, the virus will not be living, will not be viable in the milk. There are news stories where fragments of the virus have been found in the milk, and those fragments remain in the milk after the virus has been killed. It's the genetic material from the virus that's there rather than viable virus. And so the government of Canada is interested in whether there is evidence in Canadian milk of those fragments in the absence. So they are undertaking testing. They announced that just about a week ago, that they are testing retail milk to see whether there is evidence of virus in the retail milk. So they're quite interested in the safety of the milk supply and also on how widespread the influenza virus might be in Canada, because we don't have any cases that we're aware of at this point.
Well, as they should be. We have a lot more questions about this, Dr. Tremblay. There's a lot more to talk about, but we need to take a short break for a message from our sponsor. Stay tuned. We have plenty of more questions for you about HPAI after the break.
Meet a Canadian dairy farmer. Planting one tree, then hundreds more. To naturally purify the air. Preserving wildflowers for pollinators and nurturing wetlands for healthier soil so wildlife can prosper.
Biodiversity is in our nature.
Working towards a sustainable future. That's Dairy Farming Forward.
We're in! We're back on the Canadian PodCow with Dr. Robert Tremblay. Dr. Tremblay, how does HPAI virus circulate and spread? I mean, we've talked about it being around. How do you get it? How does it move around between animals? And is it just birds and cows, or are there other species that are affected by this?
Okay. So that's another multi-layered response. And I will do the weasel words at the start. I will say that there are things that we know, and there's lots that we kind of don't know at this point. So we know that in infected herds, multiple cows become infected, and we believe that cows infect other cows. We believe the best hypothesis is that the infection likely spreads at milking because milk from infected cows, and it is likely based on the information that we have that cows will have some virus in their milk before they get sick themselves. So if possible that it would be spread that way. We also know that on some of the herds that have had sick cows, there is illness amongst cats, and this disease is fatal for cats. And there have been reports of illness amongst raccoons as well, which it's also been fatal in those animals. Those are actually some of the clinical signs of having the outbreak. There's been limited spread to humans, which is a relief. So even people working closely with cows, it's limited spread. But anytime people are working with animals with influenza, we always get worried that whether it represents a risk to them. And the only documented case in people has been relatively mild, in that not life-threatening disease or serious illness, but still it's something to be concerned about. So the recommendations, if flu is suspected in the cows or if flu is confirmed in the cows that the people who are actually working with the cows should wear protective clothing. So gloves, goggles, particularly non-ventilated goggles, so that you're not infected in your eyes, because that's where the infection occurred in the documented case in the United States. And then protective clothing, because you also don't want to risk spreading the infection in through other animals that you're going to work with on the herd. So there's PPE for the farm worker for themselves to protect themselves, and then there's PPE for limiting the spread of the infection to other cows on the same farm.
Because on that, when we talk about the spread, those were people that were working specifically with the cows.
Yeah.
It's still been a case of, as long as that milk is pasteurized, that virus is killed.
Yeah. And so there's the research in Canada is kind of, it's already started. I just don't know the results yet. But in the United States, where they've been quite transparent with what they've done, they've looked at large numbers of retail milk samples, and they find evidence that the virus was there, but it's viral fragments. It's not a viable virus. And they've gone the next step with taking that milk and then putting it on eggs. So you take fertilized eggs, and the flu virus grows well in fertilized eggs. So you put the milk in the fertilized eggs to see whether the egg becomes infected with the influenza virus, and that has not happened, which confirms that it's not viable virus that's in the milk. It is fragments of virus. They've also, in the U.S., and I haven't seen Canadian results yet, they've looked to see whether the virus is present in hamburger produced from dairy cows, and there's no evidence that there's viable virus in hamburger either.
I think it's really helpful to have some clarification about the PPE and the ways to protect yourself on the farm, given that we've been through COVID and are kind of thinking PPE equals a face mask, and the goggles is a really helpful thing to mention. I also wanted to ask, aside from monitoring your property for unusual amounts of dead birds, cats, and raccoons, what are precautions that we should take on the farm, and should closed herds be preferred during this time?
So in Canada right now, we're in the situation where the biggest risk is to bring the disease onto your farm. And we're pretty confident that the major risk is through the movement of infected cattle. So being close to the potentially infected cattle, particularly lactating cattle, would be a step. Early on in the outbreak, we were very concerned about whether birds were a major source, but the genetic analysis of the outbreak viruses suggests that the move from birds to cows has only occurred once so far. It is unlikely that it will occur again, but it would be possible. So if there are dead birds, then of course, then keeping birds away from situations on the farm where cows could be exposed to either dead birds or feces from birds, et cetera, would be important. And then visitors to the farm, particularly visitors that have been outside Canada in the U.S. and coming to Canada and had been in other barns, those are just good general biosecurity. But by far and away, the most important is keeping a closed herds, at least in the short term, to cows, particularly lactating cows. Having said that, if lactating cows coming into Canada now from the United States, they need to be tested to be free of the virus in order to gain entry in Canada. And it was April 29th that any cattle coming into Canada, lactating cattle coming into Canada after April 29th, would have to have been tested, have their milk tested before they came into Canada.
So you mentioned, and I just want to kind of come back around to this, you mentioned kind of the biosecurity things in terms of visitors from other farms, you know, particularly the U.S. Like, is that something that we should all kind of look at in terms of just, you know, better biosecurity practice? You know, what other things can we do to kind of beef up that system to make sure that if for whatever reason it does find its way into Canada, we're kind of already ready with those initiatives on farm?
Right. The biosecurity, if you're right now, if you would adopt the biosecurity practices in relation to a closed herd and then implement the biosecurity practices that are part of the ProAction biosecurity module, then you're doing as well as you could possibly do in a practical sense. And so that's it. The ProAction biosecurity guide is a very good guide to look at the details of what you should be doing, particularly now in a time of heightened awareness.
I think a big thing in terms of just ensuring for producers, just the big thing is just making sure that they're aware of a few and just prepped. And honestly, the easiest one is obviously the ProAction side of things because they've got it there already. Approved by it already.
Right. So I could go through 2 pages of things that they should do. And I'm not sure that's the most effective way to do it. Whereas if you look at the biosecurity module in ProAction, if you're doing substantively what's in the biosecurity manual, and I think I think you're doing as well as you could.
Yeah.
The big thing now is, the risk is probably less, because of the testing of lactating animals coming in from the U.S. now.
Yeah.
But maintaining a closed herd, particularly to lactating animals this time.
So these are all really important things. Are there any alternative prevention measures that we might be able to take? Is this something that there's going to be a vaccine for? Is there anything different we can do with diet? Anything that you are aware of that we can do to help prevent this on the farm aside from the things we've talked about?
Well, I always like to think that healthy cows are more resistant cows, so general health is important. Although we're not sure, there will always be a stressed group of cows on the farm, whether it's fresh cows or high producing cows. You know, there's always a group that might be more susceptible. There is no vaccine at this point, and so it would likely take some time to develop a vaccine, and so there's no possibility of vaccinating at this point. Whether there will be, it's difficult to say in the future.
Now, this is kind of another one of those questions for those cases you've seen in the United States, because as we've determined, we have not found it in Canada to this point. Let's talk about those farms that are feeding whole milk to calves. If that is the source of transmission, obviously, there's no question that pasteurization, as we've discussed, is one way to fix it. But is it a real problem if that milk is not pasteurized for those calves, or what else can they do if they don't have a pasteurizer?
So once the clinical disease is present, then a basic principle is that abnormal milk just gets diverted for disposal. And so there's no possibility that it would be fed to calves. We know that the evidence is very strong that pasteurization or heat treatment of milk inactivates the virus. So if the milk looks normal but is going to be fed to calves, it's probably prudent to pasteurize it or heat treat it. Acidification, we don't know yet. There's no science to show that acidification either works or doesn't work. The suspicion is, because the influenza virus is relatively resistant to acid, that the acidification protocols that are now being used may not be effective in inactivating influenza virus. We can't say for sure it isn't. We can't say for sure it is, but the suspicion is that it may very well not be effective. So heat treatment is the way to go.
And then if those calves do get it, and this is kind of a question for, again, those that have seen it, like, are calves susceptible the same way with maybe some scours, maybe off feed, or do we even know if they are? Because obviously they don't have the same stress of lactation.
The disease has not seemed to be very prominent in calves, in herds. But saying that, the production system in the U.S. is often very difficult, very different than it is in Canada, in that calves are raised off-site and go to calf ranches and so on and so forth. So I don't know what the follow-up will be. We may find there is some mild illness in calves, but right now it's not well described.
That's an important nuance of the different systems and the ways we raise cattle, that's for sure. So you mentioned that the United States requires a screening test before lactating cows cross state lines. And I know now we're requiring the same test if those cattle are to come from the United States into Canada, I think. You can clarify for me.
Yep.
So what's the impact for us on farm? I know there's definitely in the Lower Mainland here in British Columbia, quite a few herds that import a lot of cattle. What's the impact on those herds and how will this work out going forward, do you think?
So any cows coming in, lactating cows that are would have been coming into the Lower Mainland since April 29th, it was required that they be tested. There are also conditions on where they came from. They had to be had to have no evidence of clinical disease of avian influenza of HPAI prior to being presented to the border, and the herd that they came from also had to be free. So there's kind of a three layer. It's still probably worthwhile to isolate those cows for 3 weeks when they come in, because the evidence is reasonably strong that even if they were harboring the virus and shedding it, for example, in their milk, that they would not be shedding it 3 weeks or so after the clinical disease. So it's wise to isolate animals that are coming in under those circumstances.
Now then, just to wrap up then, Rob, in terms of, you know, going forward, you've laid a few good things out. We're obviously watching, testing these animals coming into the States. That is one source of infection. You know, so we've kind of got that covered off. CFIA or, you know, the government at least is working with, you know, testing retail milk just to see if it exists at all. Are we now kind of, okay, we beef up the system and now we just wait? Or what can we as producers kind of expect going forward? It's kind of like, you know, waiting, you know, kind of behind just for that door to, you know, blow open or something. But is it just kind of a case of we do the best we can and hope it doesn't happen and deal with if it does? Or what else do we do?
Most of the initiatives now are minimizing spread. So reducing the number of infected cows, reducing the number of infected herds. We know that cows that are infected recover. And so this is the type of disease that propagates itself by finding new cows to infect. And so the idea is to minimize the amount of disease until essentially the infections run out of susceptible animals. And I think that is the scenario that everybody would like to see happen. Whether it continues to spread, it's difficult to predict the future on that. But the objective in Canada would be to prevent introduction and until there's the risk of exposure of the Canadian herd declines to the point where it's not a consequence. We have no real idea whether this virus will disappear or become just what is called endemic in the population. But right now, the objective is to minimize the amount of spread.
Well, Dr. Tremblay, this has been incredibly helpful for me, I know, and I'm sure for our producers out there listening. So thank you very much for taking the time to answer our questions. It's so much appreciated.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. And it's one of these things. Our knowledge is evolving with HPN1, and I'm sure some of the things that we believe are true now will turn out to be not true.
Well, don't be surprised if you hear from us again then. We'll circle back with you for an update if it sure. gets to that.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Well, sir, actually, like talking with Dr. Tremblay actually gives me kind of great confidence in the system we have in Canada, both, you know, kind of as that, you know, surveillance system to say, okay, let's see where it is, if we even have it. But then obviously just having things lined up, and it sounds like everybody's kind of already getting in place for what to do if and when it does show up. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think all the discussion today about the major differences between how this is showing up in dairy than how it showed up in poultry was really helpful for me, given that
there's not a super strong connection between the two. Despite it being called avian influenza, it sounds like the cattle experience is very, very different and the prevention measures are very, very different. And that is good.
It absolutely is good. And just that reinforcement that like milk is completely safe. That virus does not exist in its live form once you pasteurize it. So just kind of that reminder for everyone is definitely, you know, it helps me to make sure that we can continue to rely on the safety of the milk system.
Yeah, such a knowledgeable guest to talk about, that's for sure. Don't be surprised if you hear Dr. Tremblay on here again. We really enjoyed chatting with him. But that's it for today of this... We'll start again. Sorry, Bruce. Well, we really enjoyed talking to Dr. Tremblay today. He was such a knowledgeable guest, so don't be surprised if you hear him on the podcast again. But that's it for today's episode. A huge thanks to our guest, Dr. Robert Tremblay, of course.
And of course, to our production team, Carl Bellager and Bruce Sargent, and of course, our sponsor, the Dairy Farmers of Canada.
Folks, if you have additional comments on this episode or any other episode we've done, please drop by our Facebook page and our Twitter account, or also you can email us at podcast@canadianpodcow.ca. We'd love to hear from you, and we're looking forward to doing episodes on things you're interested in. So certainly reach out, let us know, and we'll be back again.